Welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast. We're pulling back the curtain on high cash value life insurance and how it can help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon cash flow pro.
My name is Jing with Tech Exam Millionaire Club.
And my name is Carlo Vaccaro with Net Wealth Finance.
Today, we're going to try to just have a robust discussion talking about things that we hear, things that we've maybe discussed with our clients, some problems that we see with how maybe other agents might show how cash value life insurance might get used in retirement. And then we'll dive into our specific plans, at least as they sit today. We're all quite a ways away from retirement, but I think we're going to each give you some insight into what our individual plans might look like with how we'll use our high cash value life insurance to supplement our retirement. Before we dive into that, though, we might have some updates on some of our personal investment options. Jing, I know you just had an attempt to purchase a slow flip that fell through. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. What's on your checklist? And ultimately, what failed the test?
Sure. The house is an okay house, but I do notice there's a foundation issue. I digged in, I request all the document, and I just don't like it. For foundation issues, for everyone who wants to do the real estate investing, that's one of the biggest ticket item you could ever face. That's why eventually I said, nope, I have to pass this one.
So that's one of your no-goes. If you see foundation issues, you just turn the other direction?
Well, if they fix it, which in this case, they did fix it, but I requested all the documentation, all the warranty work, and that piece of document I receive is really, really low quality. I don't like what I see at all.
Gotcha. So ultimately, if you just don't feel comfortable with it, it's time to find a different deal.
Exactly.
That's a good philosophy. Probably saves you a lot of headache.
Exactly. Foundation issues can be easily tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I agree that foundation issues are certainly a thing among various other things that could be an instant no-go on a deal. I agree on that. An update on my investments is based on some of the stuff that James had mentioned around dividend yield ETF that he's in. I decided to purchased 100 shares of QDTE. This is not financial advice or recommendations for anybody else's particular situation, but I think it's an interesting thing to add to the portfolio, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Right on. I started doing videos on that on my channel where we took a loan from our life insurance policy, bought some of this particular ETF, the tax advantages for it, and the dividends that it kicks off allows that to pay back the loan. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we're going to have the loan paid down and we'll still have the shares. It's basically infinite banking in action, and we're documenting it on my channel. Glad to see you're coming along for the ride with that one. That kind of brings us into one of the ways that life insurance can help supplement our retirement, the topic of the day. People are going to have investments that are going to be paying off dividends. They're going to have investments that maybe they'll sell out of. It could be pre-tax, could be after-tax. And life insurance acts as a really good volatility buffer when people start drawing money out of the stock market. Sequence of returns is a real concern for people that are getting close to retirement. There's been a lot of studies done that show if the market has a big drop within your first few years of retirement, with a 4% draw, the odds of success go way down. Or you have to just take out less money in order to make sure that that portfolio might succeed, as opposed to being able to let the portfolio recover and draw from some other assets.
So I would add, I think that when we look to incorporate life insurance into this, one of the ways that sort of sets apart how we might tap into whole life as compared to other products is we want to withdraw up to our basis first, because there's not necessarily going to be opportunity for arbitrage. And by doing that, we still access those funds tax-free. If the market is down at that particular time, that's a good time for us to supplement our needs using something like whole life to tap into, rather than impacting our 4% rule plans and needing to adjust the long-term stuff. Whole life can be a good tool for that type of circumstance.
Good points. The high cash value products that we talk about on this channel are basically whole life and index universal life. And they have a couple of different ways that we intend to draw on the value in those products in retirement. As Carlo mentioned, whole life, we're going to draw that basis first. We're going to withdraw up to the amount we've already paid into the policy before we start taking loans. That's generally because we don't expect any arbitrage with that type of a product. We don't expect to earn more in the growth in the product than we will pay out in interest to the insurance company. Whereas in the IUL, we do have the opportunity for arbitrage. And so you don't necessarily want to do a withdrawal basis if you're able to borrow at 5% and get an average return that's going to be well over 5%.
And I think that's exactly the point. That when I was mentioning whole life and the difference there is that when we look at IUL, the difference being that opportunity for arbitrage can be very powerful in extending our overall draw period and how we tap those funds. Because unlike when you do a draw from a normal portfolio, let's say at the 4% rule, you're selling assets to cover that. Or maybe you're tapping some of your dividends for a portion of that. But generally speaking, you're selling assets to cover that. With an IUL, when you have the opportunity for arbitrage, you can borrow at a given rate and draw an income possibly that is a little bit higher by virtue of that opportunity for arbitrage. That's not a guaranteed scenario. So there's also other ways that we might shift some of that arbitrage into a more fixed draw with the wash loan that is available in these IULs as well.
And I know that we're talking about how cash value life insurance can supplement our retirement, which assumes that we have other investments in other places, that we've saved up in other places. But there's a lot of people that try to pitch IUL or whole life as the main financial retirement tool. Any of you got a problem with that?
Well, based on my experience, I know a lot of people, when they try to sell, especially high premium like whole life or IUL, they always make it because they can illustrate at later year at age 65 or 70 or 75, whatever they want to start pitching for the retirement for the client. They always illustrate how much money you can withdraw from the cash value at X dollar per year for 10, 15 years. I want to mention this. That's just an illustration purpose. That's just a way for you to see with this funding scenario, how much money you will have saved in that cash value and what's the, based on the software, what's the annual safe draw rate in those years. But those are flexible numbers. You don't have to do it.
That's one of my biggest issues when it comes to illustrating loans as retirement income. We're very limited on what we can do to change the loan rate or the loan types. And so what you end up with is this illustration that just shows the same amount of money coming out every single year. And there's a lot of variables that go into determining if that's even going to be possible. It's generally my preference to not illustrate loans because we're going to have to figure that out when we get to that point. Let's optimize for cash growth up until then. If we can grow that cash value as high as possible, clearly we're going to be able to draw out a higher amount. But the reality is, it's going to vary. Some years you're going to take out more. Some years you're going to take out less. Maybe you don't take anything out. The beauty of it is, whatever we don't end up drawing out of those does get passed on as that death benefit.
I think that when we think about how we're going to draw, I want to get into, well, what I'm going to do and how I'm going to approach this. And in my overall plans and portfolio, I certainly want to incorporate real estate and dividend income. That's probably where I'm going to start. And in the early years, I will probably use my life insurance to supplement some of those bigger capital expenditures. Maybe I want to purchase a new car or something like that. I'm probably not going to tap those first when we're talking about those other income streams that I have through either real estate or dividend income. I might look to use those before I use my life insurance. And I'll probably pivot to my life insurance in that bridge time frame between when I might start drawing from Social Security and or my other retirement vehicles. This is probably likely going to be also before I'm 59 and a half. This is kind of my plan as somewhere around that time frame, I might already be semi-retired. I'm going to always kind of be working, in my opinion. But I think that at that point, having that financial independence, I will, after 59 and a half, start tapping my Roth if I wanted to. But I think I'll defer that as long as I can, for the most part, and maybe some other retirement accounts that I don't have penalties after that point as well. So it's kind of a high level stab at things. I'm probably leaving things out, but figure I'd throw some of those plans out there.
I think we're all fairly young enough that any plans we make for retirement right now are definitely subject to change. We're going to have some ideas, though. I think in my case, I'm going to have annuities that I'm going to slowly start adding to the portfolio. We added our first one last year. We're going to add some more over the next few years so that ultimately that's going to make up the base of my guaranteed income, along with Social Security when that ends up getting turned on for us. And my Roths, we're going to have a substantial amount in the Roths. I absolutely love the Roth IRA. My favorite tool out there. Mostly because I don't expect to touch it until last. It will be the last thing that I touch, because with the Roth, anything that you leave in there when you die, your beneficiaries get 10 more years of tax-free growth. We don't even get that with the life insurance. The life insurance will just pay out at death. Now, it could be a multiple of what you've paid into it, but you don't get 10 more years of tax-free growth. That's where we got to have that family planning come in, where our beneficiaries, our kids, our relatives, they have life insurance policies. So when the death benefits do pay out, they have the ability to dump that into a policy so it can continue to grow cash free. But we don't have to worry about that with the Roth. That will eventually pay out tax free and it can continue to grow. And ultimately, maybe they dump that into their life insurance as well if we've properly planned for things. My expectation is my annuities first, get my income base with that and my Social Security. Then I will work on money that I have in my pre-tax accounts, shifting that over either into a Roth or draw. And ultimately, I'm probably going to use the cash value of my life insurance. I have whole life and IULs, and they're going to be substantial when I get to retirement. So my expectation is I will probably utilize the cash value from those while I move everything from my pre-tax into my Roth so I can grow that Roth as big as possible without having to tap into my pre-tax accounts before converting them to a Roth. If I can convert all of that to the Roth and then I just draw from my life insurance, I think that's probably going to be the best approach for us.
That's a really great point about tapping those in that bridge time where you might be trying to do Roth conversions, because you can basically delete your income, be drawing this no income phase, and do a strategy where you might accelerate some depreciation and have no reported income for some of those years where you're doing your conversions, and you can use your life insurance to cover your life expenses.
That is going to be my goal. Hopefully we can do all the conversions and have it offset somehow.
Well, for me, I think the real estate income should still be the majority of our household income. So my sequence will be still all the real estate, so-called passive income. And then we'll do the retirement when we have higher, bigger ticket items saying we need to go somewhere or someone is sick. So that will be from the life insurance. And then I started funding self-directed inactive HSA and FSA account. So right now, our household, I'm self-employed. So my husband, we have been using the high deductible health plan. So we are funding the HSA and FSA. When he resigns and he goes to another company, that previous plan, you can self-direct them. So that's another funding I plan for, especially the one we talked, the no-go period, because that's the only one you could just basically triple down tax-free, tax-free in, tax-free growth, and tax-free for medical expenses. So that's my plan.
I appreciate Jing's perspective on this. Of the three of us, she is the only one that's basically solely focused on real estate as her major source of investments. That's like the focus of her time. And I do have a couple of questions as to your thinking. When I talk to real estate agents, I have some certain things in mind as to how to maximize your cash flow in retirement and asset protection when it comes to retirement, with real estate in particular? Are you planning on having your real estate be paid off at that time? And so your monthly income draw is going to be based on just the rents as they come in? Or is there some other strategy?
My ultimate goal is to get off all the 30-year mortgage. And then the mandatory costs will be property tax, home insurance, and the general repair and maintenance. And then since I started withdrawing from the cash value of my IBC, so I will start funding some of that back to the life insurance. So it's more like rolling of the money. You pull money out from life insurance, you put into real estate, and you get the rent. Once you have the positive cash flow, you roll back to life insurance policy, the IBC policy.
So it sounds like you're going to have the real estate paid off. My question when you were speaking about this earlier was, when you said semi-passive or so-called passive, I agree. I think generally real estate is not entirely passive. Do you have plans to take on professional management in your retirement or anything of that nature to make it a little bit more passive at that phase of your life? What's your overall plans at that point and at that stage?
We have a turnaround period, right? Right now, like my portfolio, I'm kicking people out, put the right people in. I think since that's the portfolio I'm holding, I'm the one who will put a lot of hard effort into it. Once the portfolio is way stable, I can find some professional management. I can create a barrier between me and the tenant. So the property management will handle a lot of day-to-day operation to make it at least semi-passive. The slow flip, which I'm leaning towards to right now, is I will be the bank, completely bank. So I don't take care of any of the repair maintenance. And I will take the 30-year mortgage for lease. We call it contract for deed. So if I have a portfolio of every single one of them as the bank, then I don't even have that repair and maintenance headache at all. That's my ultimate goal.
And then you're just managing the payments as they come in. You're not managing the property.
Exactly. Like what we are paying to Wells Fargo and Chase, right? If your roof is leaking, you find someone to fix it. So I become the Wells Fargo or bank. I just receive that bank money every month. That's the ultimate goal. Especially my age, maintaining the turnover at real estate, you can really, we call sweat equity, right? You can really increase the value of the real estate property, but that takes a lot of work, that takes capital, that takes the operator's time and energy. That's why I really like the concept of slow flip. Eventually, I will start shifting, but eventually my goal at the end, I will just all have those slow flips. I'll be the bank.
And if your portfolio is large enough, is the plan to have an employee, have somebody manage your bank for you in that regard?
Probably. And then if it's large is enough and it's beautiful to sell, I probably can just sell and just get all the equity out.
When you are managing these slow flips, are you predefining, I assume the contracts for deed that you're defining have predetermined foreclosure processes? Are you worried at all about having to do foreclosures when you're in retirement?
Yes, the foreclosure, the different states will have different procedures. Some will just be a regular eviction. Some they will, you will have to go through the foreclosure stage to really get that person out. So I think right now I'm still young, right? When in my retirement, I hope I will have a lot of slow flips, and I will know the ropes already at that time. And then I will also focus probably maximum 3 states. I will now go to 50 different states and get to know their regulation, though their process. I'll just focus on 1 or 2, maybe maximum 3 states. to get my slow flip. And eventually, if you amortize that into 30 years, they will eventually own the property, right? You will be out. So you have to stagger your properties. So that's a working process.
I do have conversations with people that have investments in real estate. And I imagine this will be a little different for you because you're planning on having a larger portfolio. You have some commercial properties already, and you might be in a position where you could even combine your portfolio. And so you might not have to rely on your income to get a mortgage on a property. But something that I've talked with folks about is when you get to retirement, if your ability to get a mortgage on a property is dependent on your income, which for a lot of people it is, even for their investment properties, they could have, you know, 5 or 10. And then the properties that they're getting are still going to require their income to support it if it's not a commercial property. So what I like to put into their head is what you might consider is right before you retire, when you still have an income, get a new loan on that property rather than let it go and become paid off. Normally, the plan that real estate people have is you get a tenant, you have a mortgage, the tenant pays the mortgage off. When you get to retirement, everything is timed wonderfully. And now you have a paid off property that's, you get to collect the full rent, nothing goes to mortgage, and that gets to help supplement your retirement. The challenge with that is, what if something happens? All of your equity is tied up in that house. And I don't like that. I'm not a big fan of tying up our equity into something that requires the permission of a bank to tap into. And usually, to get that permission, you're going to have income. And if you're in retirement, you're going to get denied. They're not going to give you a loan on that. So that means your option is to sell. And if you're forced to sell, you're not going to be able to get an optimal price for it. It's going to be dependent on the market. It's going to be dependent on how quickly you need the cash. Like, there's all kinds of variables. So my preference is get a loan, get a new 30-year loan right before you retire. You're sitting on all that cash. What do you think I suggest we do with that cash?
Or get in life insurance.
We put it in life insurance. If we get a whole life policy, you know that it's going to grow at a certain rate. It will definitely have a death benefit. We know the costs behind it. We're not parking it in IUL in this situation, unless we maybe have loans that we can just pay off inside of our policies, right? If we've planned for it ahead of time, we can just have a loan that we can take, pay that off. And now our equity is sitting in policies we already own. But maybe you take on a new policy. And when you buy that new policy, let's say you get a mortgage for $300,000 on a property. You buy a life insurance policy and the money that you put in there suddenly turns into $1 million in death benefit. If something were to happen to you shortly into retirement, your beneficiaries just made way more money than if you had just left that money sitting in the property. That $1 million death benefit can pay off the property and they'll still have money left over. They may not even have to pay off the property. Maybe they just want the cash because they don't want to be a real estate owner. Maybe they don't want to be a landlord. Like, it gives a lot of flexibility, but we take that equity that was in the property, we turn it into equity in our life insurance, and the equity in our life insurance is liquid and we can tap into it in retirement as needed. If we ever want to use it to pay off the mortgage, we can. If we want to use it to just make mortgage payments, we can. So you end up with control of way more money and the flexibility to do a lot more rather than having that equity stored inside of a property throughout retirement. What do you guys think? Have you guys thought about these things before?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic point. And another thing to consider is it might not be right before your retirement. It could depend on what the interest rate environment is leading up to it. Particularly right now, it's not a fantastic time to go ahead and do that. But as you're maybe 5 years out from retirement, you see that interest rates are at 10, 20-year lows, then that might be a perfect opportunity to do something like that. So it really, in my mind, depends on that, but it's very likely that we're going to see lower interest rates than they are right now at some point in the future. So that should be part of the planning process, is moving some of that equity that could become low interest debt against the property into maybe a higher yield inside of a whole life product.
Another possibility is to have portfolio loans. You bundle them up. Just say you have 20 houses all paid up. You have no bank you're putting the mortgage with, but you have all this equity sitting in those 10, 20 houses. You bundle that up. A lot of banks will do that because when you bundle, it's a sizable loan. and then you get another new 30-year mortgage, but then you get a big chunk of equity out of those 10, 20 houses, and then you can buy more. Well, before you buy more, probably put into the life insurance through the IDC first, and then you go buy more and creating more golden goose.
Yeah, but if you're just getting to retirement, you may not want to take on a whole new effort to go deploy all of that cash that you just accessed. But I did figure a portfolio loan might be in place for you when you get there because of the size of your real estate portfolio, what you envision it being. Didn't you say you were hoping to have like 500 doors?
And I think the banks like that because you're bundling a number of assets that reduces their risk by virtue of having the opportunity to cover with more than one asset. So I think there are obviously some risks to that. But if you're putting it into your whole life policy that is a very secure asset, then that can be risk reduction and still be good. Another thing for those that might not be as broadly invested in real estate, there is the concept that I've seen a lot more over the past few years of DSCR, or debt service coverage ratio. Oftentimes, this does come with some kind of points in order to close that, but it's effectually an asset-based loan that is not tied to your income. Assuming you have decent credit, then you can get a DSCR loan against your properties that are having some kind of yield and earning income from rents.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I was figuring somebody that has a larger portfolio will encounter. But if you're working with people that have just a handful of properties, they're probably still going to rely on their personal income. And definitely something we're going to take into consideration when it comes to planning for retirement. I think that's a good place to wrap up today's conversation. I appreciate you guys. We'll probably dig into this more in some future episodes, so be sure to stick around. And if you got questions about anything we talked about here or suggestions, certainly reach out to us. You can leave them in the comment section on our YouTube videos.
Also on the About page of lifepod.us, you can check out each of our individual links and you can contact each one of us by clicking on our names.
Great. So they can just go to our website and figure out how to contact us that way if they have any questions. Next week, we're going to talk about how to use your policy and using it for infinite banking. Before we leave today, though, do either of you have a call to action for our viewers?
It's time for this week's call to action.
Well, I want to encourage everyone to really think about your retirement. It's not one size fits all. And then during your lifetime, I think you really have to plan what are the different buckets you have, you accumulate in your lifetime. How do you plan to use it? And then at that stage, also take a look how much you have, what's the tax consequences? Do you need to do the Roth conversion if you still have some in a traditional IRA or traditional 401k? So just really encourage everyone to think about your retirement. People are saying we take too much time to do the vacation versus retirement planning.
I would say one of the great tools that life insurance gives you is that liquidity. So it does give you opportunity to increase your savings rate by virtue of knowing that you don't lose access to it. So get in touch with one of us or, you know, some cash value life insurance specialist. I think we're probably some of the best in the business. And that is something that you might want to add to your overall retirement plan.
And I would say a good call to action is to take some time, find a place, could be a spreadsheet. Spreadsheet would be a great place to do this. List all of your assets, what you expect to have by retirement. Start coming up with understanding where you're going to be at pre-tax, after-tax, tax-free, what's tax-deferred. And then if you have the knowledge, you can start making plans yourself, but you can always reach out to people like us and other financial advisors and just start getting input. You don't want to wait until you're ready to retire to do this. Plan ahead of time. Start talking to people and get some idea. There's a lot of people that you can talk to at no cost. You may even find it valuable to talk to some people that you just pay a little bit for their time. There's a lot of financial advisors out there that just charge you by the hour, help you come up with a plan, give you some ideas. And then you've got people that will earn a commission if they sell you certain products. That's like life insurance agents. We make a commission if we sell you certain products, but we give financial advice for free surrounding that. For a lot of life insurance agents, you got to take some of their advice with a grain of salt because they do make their income from selling you the life insurance, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad product. There could be a good way to utilize it. And hopefully, with the education that you're getting from our life pod here, you're going to be able to make some really good decisions in that regard. And your conversations with all of these folks will really help bear some fruit. And with that, I'm James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro. I am licensed across the country for life insurance and annuities. And you can find me on YouTube at Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
I'm Jane with Tech Exam Millionaire Club, a school community. You can find me there by searching Tech Exam Millionaire Club. I'm a licensed life insurance agent as well. Hopefully, if there's anything we could be of any value, contact us and then we'll see what we can help you with. If there's anything in real estate you could think of, I could be of any help, feel free to reach out as well.
And my name is Carlo Vaccaro. You can find me at netwealthfinance.com or on YouTube at netwealthfinance. And we work with clients across the country as well.
For life insurance and annuities, right?
Yes.
Excellent. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for watching.
Thank you.